We're done 1 Samuel. Today is the end of 1 Samuel. And rather than me go over more of the story, what I thought we would do is just have some time to maybe decompress. And in the church, we do this very often. Again, we've talked about it all the time. We've got to fill the calendar. We've got to fill the Sundays. We've got to fill the themes. We've got to fill the every Sunday, whatever section we're going through, whatever theme, whatever. We just go, go, go. This morning, I want to kind of rest and look back at what we've talked about. Because the goal for all of this, I hope we remember, is not to just have a cool message, have a cool Sunday morning. Hey, Ryan, that was really an awesome thing you said. The goal of all of this is to be transformed. And the goal of all of this is to have this information pass through into deeper parts that actually move us to become different people that are more like Jesus. And sometimes we just don't let that stuff sit enough. So this morning, I'm going to recap the whole story, and I'm going to basically recap all of the messages as we gave them, very short little recaps. And even for me, it was incredibly helpful to go back through and, oh, yeah, oh, that one, oh, yeah. I mean, I gave these things, so I can only imagine none of you remember them either. So the goal this morning is I'm going to go through them pretty slowly, and I would encourage you maybe to just think about them a little and let it sink in. Maybe some of you had some amazing experiences, and if so, I would love to hear about that when I'm done. So we're going to give you a little bit of time, and maybe no one says anything, and that's great. We'll sit in some silence and continue to think on it. But I get to hear stories from people who are moved by stories of the Old Testament or by words or by things other people are doing, and you often don't. So I would love for you to have a chance to share maybe if there's been anything you've learned throughout this time. Which again, hopefully there's something. Otherwise, it's just, we have great Sunday mornings that mean nothing, and that's really boring religion and spirituality. All right, so we're going to go back, and it's hard to believe it was September we started this. And we started with setting up the whole story. And if you weren't here, then this will be kind of the summary of the whole deal. We started off in Judges, even though we were talking about 1 Samuel. Israel was a mess in Judges. Remember, things were bad. One of the most violent books of the Bible. Leading up to, in those days, Israel had no king. In those days, Israel had no king. In those days, Israel had no king. And we get to 1 Samuel, and it begins with the birth of a baby from a barren woman. Remember, Hannah was praying she would be able to have a child, and she was barren, which all good stories. And we're saying, oh my gosh, what a great way to start a story. In those days, Israel had no king, a barren woman going to the priest, please give me a child. And she gives birth to a son named Samuel. And we got this impression that Samuel is going to be the savior of Israel. We also talked about that most of this book, Most theologians would say, was written later when Israel was in exile. So there's a lot of context to this book of people way down here looking back to those days when we had no king, and then Samuel came as the last priest and brought us into this period of kings and rulers, which we always wanted. So there's this kind of looking back, beautiful thing. And it came about with the birth of Samuel. And kind of the theme of that message is still up there. You are. And we talked about the way that God views you. And there was almost this beautiful way of Hannah raising up this son to be a hero. And you are a hero. It's the point of all of us. You're here to change the world, to really change the world, not just say it. And so we wrote some things about who you are. We had you write them down. Who does God say you are? Then we went into the second week. And we talked about the priest's evil sons. Remember these guys that were kind of distorting religion. And we talked about one of the missing pieces with them is that they may have understood who they were, but they kind of missed out on the point that who all people are. So we flipped those around. They said, you are, and then we flipped them to say, they are. Because there's a few ways we can go through life. One, we can picture that God views all of us as really pitiful human beings who are worms and disgusting and dirt. To me, I don't find a lot of life in that. Second one we can go through is say, God thinks I'm awesome. and I'm a hero, and I'm doing everything right, and I'm the man. That's better, honestly. But the third way is that, oh no, God views that of all of us. And wow, if we can get to that place, start to get a different perspective on the world. So we read some of the things that you had written, and we said, think of your enemy, think of the person that really bothers you, and picture God saying this about them as well. So we had a pretty cool little one there. The third one was the call of Samuel. And we talked about art. You guys remember this one? Showed some Thomas Kincaid paintings. Talked about John Cage's musical that was 4 minutes and 33 seconds of silence. And this art that just opens up space for things to be interpreted. And I would argue to let God speak. And we talked about how we view the Bible. And this was kind of a big one. Because a lot of us go through the Bible like it's a Thomas Kincaid painting. And we say, oh, well, see, there's the sunset, there's the little house with the fire, and here's the little stream, and here's the snow falling down. It's so clear. The other way is kind of this more, maybe postmodern art, or even more of this, there's the whole, the Louvre was just white rooms. And the artist's job was to say, there's never full silence. Someone speaks in the silence. Something is learned in the silence. So I would say the Bible is more towards this one. And we get a lot of frustration because we go with, oh, it's Thomas Kincaid painting here. It just says it clearly. And we talked about the call of Samuel and a lot of the things that are very frustrating when you go to the Bible that way. And we talked about it in this other way. If you come this way, you start to find some more beauty. And I talked about Eli kind of being a wuss and all of that stuff. I don't know if you remember that. But at the end of the day, it was Samuel as the priest ready to lead Israel. Next one we talked about was the Ark of the Covenant, God in a box. Remember that? We handed out little boxes. And Israel going through all of this stuff with bringing God to the battles, bringing God here, the tumors. Philistines opened the Ark of the Covenant and they got tumors. And it was all this very confusing. Again, if it's Thomas Kincaid painting, you're just like, what? Man, does all of this really work? What do we do with this? And then if we look at it from a little bit different perspective, we started to find that there was some beauty in this representation of the Ark of the Covenant. This meant so much to Israel, and this is where God had always been, and they needed God, and they carried God, and how we still do this today. Remember when God was in that moment, present in that thing, and we carry around these little boxes, and we gave you boxes to carry around. The next one was, what was it? Box, Samuel's going down. I just had it a minute ago. Now I forgot. This is what my dad always told me would happen if I didn't bring notes. Okay, hold on. I have to go through it. See, now I'm panicking. Crap, I've completely forgotten, you guys. This is bad. Does anybody remember? The Ark of the Covenant. Got it. Okay. Samuel, he's rolling. He's the man. Everything's going great. Israel's getting rid of all of their idols. I mean, things couldn't be going better. And what happens? He has two bad sons. Israel looks at that and says, we don't want these leaders. Samuel, we want a king. You want a king? What are you talking about? This is the best you've ever been. You're serving God. We're winning wars. God is coming to the wars in God's box. No, we want a king. So Samuel gets really frustrated with that. Goes to God. They want a king. Can you believe this? And God comes and says, yeah, tell them what a king will bring them. And it's one of the most, still to me, powerful passages in the Old Testament. This is what a king will bring, and it's what kings still bring today. Are you sure you want a king? And we tried to go through, why would they even want a king? And it's all about control, really. We want to be like the other nations. We want this. We want that. So God gives them a king. And we talked about the next one, which said, listen to them and give them a king. Which that was one of my favorites. Because we talked a lot about what is God's plan? How does God work all this? How does that make sense with listen to them and give them a king? Because there were a lot of passages that seem to say God didn't want to give them a king, and then God did give them a king, and it gets very confusing. And at the end of that, we said, okay, I don't know what to do with all of that, but we do know some things. God does have a plan to reconcile all the world. We do know what God's plan is in some ways, and rather than get sidetracked on all of this, how does God work, let's do the things we know we are supposed to be doing. So God gives them a king, and the first king was Saul. And we talked about an overview of Saul, and Saul is always viewed as the bad king, right? We went through the whole story of Saul, viewing the story as, hey, here's the bad king who always failed. And then we said, what if we flip this story and look at it from a perspective of grace? Which again is one of the most important things I think we need to remember. Because then suddenly the whole story flipped and you almost have this compassion. I did at least. I had a huge compassion and wow, Saul didn't ask for any of this. And when you start looking at it from a different perspective, the whole story changes. And what if we looked at other people around us with that perspective of grace? Wow. Wouldn't the whole story change? So Saul is king, and he makes mistakes. We talked about that. The big mistakes. And how we often go through Christianity viewing it as, oh, you can't make the mistake, because once you make the mistake, God will leave. And in that message we talked about, I almost said, I think Samuel, and again, this is where I come to the Bible with art, I think Samuel was the mess. Because Samuel wrote off Saul, made the one mistake, and it's, you're done. And I challenged us not to live that way, because I don't think that's the way God views us. We talked about the prodigal son. We talked about the stories Jesus told where Jesus seemed to imply that God never looks at the mistakes and always keeps coming and saying, no, we can do this. And again, how, if we treated others in that same way, what would that mean? Then we got to honey. And again, as Saul is going through, we talked about the Urim and the Thummim. And we talked about sacrifice and blood and rules and legalism and all of this stuff that was just in marinating in this story of Jonathan. And then we talked about honey, where Jonathan fed the troops honey, and there was this, we had little honey sticks for all of you, and you tasted it. There was this sweet, beautiful flavor, and that's where God is, and how so often religion and all of our rules and legalism just, we never get to taste the honey, and how sad that is. Because the goal of all of this is, again, to taste and see that I am good, to experience it. And Saul and so many others spent so much of their life over here. And there was this beautiful thing about just tasting the honey. And then we ended the year last year with, to obey is better than sacrifice. Which was a really interesting one, and I got a lot of feedback from a lot of you, which is going to affect what we talk about next week and for all of Lent. Because the whole message was, it's never been about sacrifice. It never has. And God has seemed to say that over and over, and Jesus said it, and we were always about, oh, this is what does it, and Jesus and the prophets and everyone else in their own way was always saying, no, it's not about that. Which many of you said, but Ryan, how does that all work with Jesus dying on the cross as a sacrifice for our sins? I mean, isn't that kind of the whole crux of our faith? That's a good question. So we're going to spend Lent talking about atonement theories, which I think is going to be awesome. Because there's a lot of theories, and that's what they're called, that's not my word, as to why Jesus died on the cross. One of them has to do with sacrifice. A lot of the other ones don't. And I think depending on how you view that, it affects a lot of the ways that we view the rest of our faith and the way that we interact with people. So I think it'll be really cool. But it still comes around that idea of Saul so caught up in, but I sacrificed. And Samuel said, no, that's not what it's about. So then this year we got into David, kind of the hero king, right? We talked about David, what makes him so special. Why did it all work for David? And there were all kinds of things, but at the end of the day, we contrasted Saul and David. And Saul, it just over and over, was afraid and always just seemingly like, oh, should I do this? Should I do this? Always on walking on glass. Just, I'm afraid I'm going to make this person matter, this person matter, this person, or I'm going to lose this, or how do I gain this? And David just comes in with this kind of attitude that you see in the story, you feel in the story of just, let's do this. I know who I am. And there was something really beautiful about that. Something about, man, how can we get more of this and less of this? More of this and less of this. The next one was Saul's hatred and jealousy of David. And we talked about hatred has its pleasures. It is therefore often the compensation by which a frightened man or woman reimburses himself or herself for the miseries of fear. Another one of my favorites that I think about often. When you hate someone, the question is, what are you so afraid of? Saul, what are you so afraid of? What are you so afraid of? What are you so afraid of? We track just the path of this hatred and jealousy, moving from little things to eventually trying to kill David. And there were always these little hints of Saul was so afraid, so afraid, so afraid, so afraid. Which is, again, if we could ask ourselves that, and I have been, and it's really healthy. It's kind of our little family motto now. Oh, I hate that guy. Dad, what are you so afraid of? Ugh. Why'd I ever say that? So good, though, this hatred. Then we talked about Jonathan. We had a Sunday devoted to Jonathan, the man able to be vulnerable, yet a manly man. Jonathan was all about David. This was a guy who said, I don't know, it's not about me. I want to make you better. I want to give you everything I can give you to be the best person you can be. And what a beautiful, beautiful way to live. And then we had the sermon that I was really torn up about, and I didn't know what I was going to say, and I acted out the last scene to the Gladiator soundtrack. You guys remember that one? One of my favorites. Ended up being, of course, it was the most stressful week of my life, because I really don't plan things that way. But again, the point of that one was just, again, so much mess of a story, and just what is all of this? And then there was this beautiful, extraordinary moment of grace. And man, that grace is so powerful when it comes like that. And all this other stuff just, this one with grace. When David had the chance to finally take vengeance and everyone said he had every reason to do it and he didn't. And it moves us. Then we talked about mixed messages. We had two stories, David not killing Saul, and then David over here with the whole Abigail debacle. What the heck was all of that? Back here, he could have killed Saul, but he didn't. And then over here, oh, God killed Abigail's husband because there was all of this mixed messages. And again, it just kind of came down to this grace moments that are the ones that we can hold on to and that draw us in and are beautiful. And then we talked about good guys and bad guys. I gave you a fake story about a terrorist. That was really fun. That was probably the most fun I've ever had at Branches. You guys were all right here, man. It was just so good. I was just like, it's just drawing you in. And I was like, no, that was fake. And you all went, and then I went, no, I made it all up. And you all went, it was so good. For me personally, I'm just sharing. It's fun to manipulate people with lies. No, that actually was another one of those really good ones that stuck with me personally. Good guys and bad guys, our programming, how often we go through life just ch-ch-ch-ch. And what if it's not that clear? What if we're the bad guy? What if none of us are? Coming back to kind of that theme. And then we did last week with this messages of what I called evil, Saul finally getting again the idea of you're a mistake, you've messed up, God will never come back to you. If you've heard it, it's evil. And these prisons that people live in. So all of that recap, and here's how the story ends. If I were going to give a sermon today, this is how the story ends. Saul commits suicide. Jonathan dies. There's a huge battle. Philistines basically win. And David goes and takes revenge on this other tribe and kills all their women and children and kind of does his own thing. Like, awesome David stuff. That's the end of 1 Samuel. Sweet. Ends on a real high note. That's it. Everybody dies. And David's kind of a wreck, and he'll go on in 2 Samuel to be the king. And if you want to see that story, go read it. It's just as amazing as first. But there were some themes I just wanted to go over maybe as we end here, and that took longer than I thought. But these are the themes I hope you come away with as we leave 1 Samuel. And I would encourage you all to continue to think about these themes. One is the way we view the Bible. And we started off 1 Samuel by saying, I'm going to take these stories a little more loosely, if you want to say it, with a little more freedom. I don't know how you want to word it. One of my favorite metaphors is the Bible is a menu. It describes things that we're supposed to taste. We're not supposed to worship the menu. We're not supposed to memorize the menu. That's great if it reminds us of what we're supposed to taste. But just memorizing descriptions of food doesn't do anyone any good. The point is to experience these stories. Not to have more information about them, but to experience the stories. And we talked over and over on Sunday after Sunday, and I hope you got the theme, that if you just come to the Bible like the Thomas Kincaid painting, or as though I've got to memorize this story because this story is what it's all about, you're going to be missing out on this faith. You're going to be missing out on this journey with God. You're going to be missing out on knowing Jesus, which is what Jesus seemed to say was more important. So I would encourage you as you continue to read the Bible, and I keep hearing it from some of you throughout the week. It's either, I got to read the Bible more, or man, the Bible, it just doesn't do it for me. And I would encourage you to read the Bible, but I would encourage you to read it with a blank canvas. And some of you go, oh, well, Ryan, that's scary. Yeah, we have a community to talk about it. But if you're going to just read the Bible, like I'm just going to read what it says. Here it is. See, it's so clear. It's just not. And I'm very okay saying that. It's just not that clear. There's so much context. There's so much culture. There's so much history. There's so much interpretation. And when people interpret, they bring their own programming into the interpretation. And there's so much programming that we have when we read it that we then read it with a certain way. And it just goes layers and layers and layers. And the point is to dig down and experience God. And if the Bible isn't helping you to experience God, then go try to experience God. And then come back to the Bible later. Because that's what God wants. A second theme is that religion has always been used for self-protection. If you look at these whole stories, I mean, this is a bunch of people using religion to protect themselves, to protect their tribe, to protect what's important about them, to view themselves as better than those people, to view God as on their side so we can kill these people. And it's still being used that way today, even though Jesus came and said, time out, that's not how it's supposed to be used. And it's another big theme of 1 Samuel, I would say, which we talked about in a lot of different ways. But man, it's almost a story of everything not to do, which is again why it's so important to not go to it and, oh, see, that's how they did it. That's how we're supposed to do it. I don't know. I think they were missing a ton on the point of it all, which is what Jesus seemed to say. Don't use it for all of those reasons. Those are wrong. which then gets into my last theme, and this one was in every message, and I think it's the most important thing. Self-fulfilling prophecies. I mean, we talk about them, not using the term. But what you think about certain things has a huge effect on what will happen. And that's why it is so important about what you think about God. That's why theology is incredibly important at its base level, which is, what do you think about God? Because if you think God is a God that you make one mistake and you're done, is a God that can barely stand to be around you, is a God that just can't wait to lay down some discipline, or a God that's on your side and everyone else is bad, or a God that can't wait to punish all of them and not you. I mean, you can go through. That will affect the way that you live. Which is why I think it's so incredibly important, and why I think I said it every Sunday. That whole idea of, like, God loves you, you know, the thing we often say about Christianity, it's really true. God loves you right now, the way you are, who you are, values you, believes in you. He's ready for you to do amazing things for this world. It's incredibly important how you think God views you. Even if we enter into Lent, if there's one thing, just say, I'm gonna really get how God views me, what God thinks of me. I mean, going back to this, it was the first week all the way to the last week. It's the theme. You see what happens when you're told you're a mistake, you make one mistake. To me, that's Saul. And it's a wreck. It's a tragedy. It's sad. It should tear our hearts open, because it happens all of the time, still today. And that's why I think it's so important you know that is not true. And the other one is, how does God view everyone around you? And again, you talk about a self-fulfilling prophecy. Everyone around me is a scum. They don't have it like I do. We have all a whole spectrum of this. But if at the end of the day, you're better than everyone else, or everyone else is failing and you're not, or all of those things, or God's given up on those people, then you're going to give up on those people because you think you have every right to, and you don't. That's not grace. That's not love. That's not everything God called us to be. Thank you, Dave. We got to get some slam poet stuff in here. That is not who we are called to be. And if there's one thing, maybe in all of 1 Samuel, just leave with this, the word grace. Every time grace shows up, it rocks our world. And every time all the other stuff shows up, and it comes in all forms, priests and rules and regulations and God in boxes and sacrifices and blood and this and that, and mistakes, and God giving up. There's this whole just thing of the story that is just like, I don't know what to do with it all. Because we're all living in that, and we don't know what to do with it all now, if we're honest. And then there's these moments of, wow, okay, this right here can change things. This can change me, it can change people around me, it can change the world. Grace. It's beautiful. It's inspirational, and I want it. So if you leave with nothing else, remember that one. Does anyone have anything to share? Let's give a moment here. And I don't even know what to call it, but I just want to give you an opportunity. Maybe you have a word. Maybe there's a few of you who say, man, I really want to encourage you. This has happened in my life. This is a story I like to hear that kind of stuff. And again, things about affecting real life. Does any of this affect your real life in any way? Maybe that's the story. Anyone have one? And it's okay if you don't. Kind of on the spot. We got one. Way in the back.
In the very, very back. Long walk, sorry. Sit on.
Yeah.
No?
Yeah.
Yeah? Can you hear me? Okay, you can. So this is just a kind of perspective for me. When we were talking about the good guys and bad guys, it kind of hit home for me because I've seen a lot of those situations recently. And in my work, I work on the ambulance in Spokane, and the other day we responded to a domestic dispute, and I can't really say much, but essentially the male in the relationship was harming the female, and then when the police came, he dropped unconscious, so we were called. So we were there, and he wasn't really unconscious, but we had to treat it as such. And it was at a time where a lot of important calls were going out. So we were angry, you know, very angry. This person who was doing a wrong is now taking resources that could be used to help someone who is really hurt right now or really sick right now. And so we had to treat it like it was a real emergency, carry this unconscious person all the way to the ER. The ER gets him to wake up. There's nothing wrong. They arrest him and take him away. And everybody around me was just mad and treating him, not harming him, but the words were just biting, you know, just saying things that cut you to the core, you know, just like, and the anger behind it was in some ways justified, that he was hurting this woman, that he was harming society by taking away, you know, important resources. But then this little voice in the back of my head was like, wait, but he is a person. He is created by God, and his life sucks right now. He made awful choices, and he's doing horrible things. But he is a being. He is a human. And these things that people are saying, he thinks he is the lowest of the low right now, because everyone's saying he is. Everyone's telling him that he does not deserve to live, essentially. That he should not be alive right now. That, yeah, it's those words that this man who is pretending to be unconscious is absorbing while he's laying there and hearing everyone in the hospital grumbling with this righteous indignation. That, you know, it was kind of justified that they were mad, but at the same time, that perspective that this is a human and he has done something wrong, but this bad guy is loved by God. And so it brought up some cool conversations afterwards where I was just like kind of convicted about it and was able to talk with my partner, and we've talked with other people on Zane, and just it was very perspective changing for me. So kind of a rambling story, but thought I'd share.
That's awesome, thank you. Sure, there's time. We're all just waiting for brats anyway.
I just wanted to, one, give you guys an update, because I had stood before you and said I was going to do this wild and crazy thing, which was to go down to Spokane and invite a bunch of strangers to dinner. And I was reminded of the God in the Box sermon of, this for me was an exercise of opening up my box and allowing God to do whatever in a really unique situation. So there were four of us from Branches, and there's probably six or seven total who gave the money that we received towards this event. We went down one Monday night, and there were three of us women who just walked along the streets and invited random strangers to come have a meal with us at Olive Garden. later that evening. And so we talked to homeless people. We talked to whoever was just passing us on the street. We talked to, we went to the mall and we talked to people who were working in the stores that night. We ended up having 11 people join us. Some who were invited ahead of time, they were acquaintances, but we didn't really know them. Three teenagers who were in some way food insecure. They didn't probably know where they were always going to get their next meal. Two other guys who claimed to be their uncles. Sure, we'll go with that. And then a guy who was homeless, 22-year-old, incredibly smart individual. He was a lot of fun to talk to. And it was a really interesting night. I just bought table topic cards and threw them on the table, and so we had just kind of random conversation. And the teenagers came in about halfway through, and they're like, "Is this the meal?" We're like, "Yeah, come join us." And they had like sat at, we had the banquet room. They sat at the other table, and we're like, "Why don't you come over to the table?" And they're kind of like, "We shouldn't be here." So I asked them, I was like, "Hey, how'd you guys hear about it?" Because we none of us had talked to them. We kind of like looked at each other and we're like, "Who invited these people?" And they're like, "There was a huge group of people talking about what was going on. So we just left and said we'd go. We were gonna go figure it out and go like if there was a meal, we were in." Like, sweet. Well, we're glad you're here. And there was a lot of awkwardness and there was a lot of uncomfortableness and there was some really great conversation. And there were some, I think the restaurant staff also was like, "We're not too sure about this, but okay." They were great about it. At the end of the night, we bought them dinner. We had some money left over, so we gave it to the one guy who lingered the longest, and that was this 22-year-old homeless man who, he had been a college student at one time and just had taken a job, and the job didn't pan out, and then, one thing leads to another. Anyway, So we gave him the extra cash, and he was just blown away by it. We were talking on the way home, though, those of us who were in the car and those of us who were part of it afterwards, about, what did this mean, or what did we take away from it? And I think that there can be an expectation that when you do something wild and crazy, God is going to do something wild and crazy, and he didn't. And that's part of what I love about this evening. The reason I did this event in the first place was based off the story of the rich guy who throws a party for all his friends. This is in the Bible. I don't know. One of the Gospels. John. We'll go with that. I don't remember at the top of my head. Luke. Sure. But he throws a party, and he invites all his friends, and all his friends are like, "I got other commitments. I got to go work in the field," or whatever. And he's like, "Well, the party is set." So he sends his servants out into the streets to invite whoever's there. And I just thought, wow, that is such an incredible way to live. And we think that only rich people can do that, but really, do rich people do that? I don't think so. And so what Branches did for me was made me rich enough to offer this to someone. And there were some friends who got behind it, and that was fun. But that's the story. Like, if you go back and you read the account of what happened, was he invited the people on the street. We don't hear what God did with that. We don't hear how that homeless person's life was changed, or how, the food insecurity. We don't know. We just know that this was a story that happened. And so I got to live this story with some Branches folks, and it was a pretty neat event. And so I just want to thank all of you for giving me the courage when I stood up here and said, "It's kind of crazy." And a lot of you said, "This is awesome. Go do it." And I'm not that extroverted that it was comfortable for me, but it was fun to just see people drop their guard. When you said, "Hey, what are you doing tonight?" They're like, "I don't know." "Well, do you want to come to dinner?" "Why?" And they're very untrusting when you talk to a stranger on the street and just ask them if they want a meal. And then once they realize, like, we're three fairly young women who don't have a clue, they're like, "Oh, actually, that's kind of cool." And so there was a lot of people excited about it, but only 11 showed up. But that's, it's not the point of the story. The point of the story is that we went and did it.
Cool. All right, well, we'll end. Sorry. Here's the thing, though. We're going to have brats. Talk. You can keep talking about cool stories. You don't have to tell everyone. Tell somebody about some way that God has impacted you recently. And I was just struck again. I can't say it enough. We don't usually get up in front of everyone and say, "Yeah, I've got a great story. I met this guy on the street, and I really just laid the law down on him. I told him he was a loser. I told him he needed to get a job. I told him he was just like, enough of this, buddy. And I said, I'm not giving you any money because you suck." And man, it was just beautiful. There's a reason those stories don't work. Because they don't work. They don't work. It's always a story of grace of some kind or another. Meals, hey, we value you. I don't know who you are, but come eat with us. That's grace. Everyone else, this guy deserves to die. Man, what if he doesn't? What if no one's ever told him that they love him? That's grace. When grace shows up, it's a beautiful story. Make those stories. God, help us make those stories. Thank you for the wild, crazy book of 1 Samuel. Thank you for drawing out some incredible truths from it. And help us again to experience those truths in our own life today, to live those stories. We love you. Amen. Enjoy the week. Hang out. Eat. Go in grace and peace.